And did you ever draw Lucy? Because I don't know if that's... Because I know Lucy had a very...
No, I did. And I didn't go very well. So
because I just guessed. Ekonene. Episode 327, kusema like, subscribe, hit the notification button, tell a friend to tell a friend, sindio?
Yeah.
Na leo tukona one of those guests that I've been really looking forward to. And uki Google, unambua like he's the most syndicated cartoonist in East and Central Africa. Sisi hapa Kenya tunamjua kama Gado. Your name is interesting. Kuna kugana ni Mwa?
Godfrey Mwampembwa.
Mwampemba. Okay.
Mwa.
Mwampembwa. Okay. Yo jina wagana naifaindikiwa ikiwa hard sana. Yeah, so tuko na Gado, of course, wengi wetu tunamjua from the newspapers, specifically Nation.
Yeah.
And of course pia online sikuzi tunamfuatilia kwa X, ilikuwa Twitter. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing naenda kuuliza, did you see the puppet, the Ruto puppet in the middle of town? Na nataka kujua watu walikuja buni studios wakaiba ama what happened, because that was the one of the funniest things to when I kwa protest.
No, I think the crew of young people who had worked with Buni before had wanted to demonstrate and to be part of the demos, and they basically just asked Buni, and we allowed them. Uh-huh. And they were, you know, they worked with our team. I'm not these days pretty. Mm. I have taken a back seat for some time now.
Mm.
But the team sort of organized they had a mock parliament.
Okay.
The idea was to show their displeasure to the of course the finance bill.
Yeah.
And so they thought of a creative way of coming up with a creative way of being part and parcel of the demos.
Okay. Yeah. So how was it to you? Because for a lot of people, like, we just kept sharing it and laughing because it looked too funny. Like, we are so used to seeing that puppet on the show. Now to just see it on the streets and what one I knew I'm gonna that was too funny. So as you kwako ilikuwaje, like, because you didn't know how they'd use it, you didn't know how the public would react.
No, not quite. I think the idea, you know, they had just the idea that they would have a mock parliament.
Yeah.
And of course, that also involves a lot of, you know, work in terms of putting it together and so forth.
Mm.
And so they had to improvise and figure out, okay, how do you you know, go about it. But it turned out to be quite funny and quite hilarious. And so
because that was hilarious. Mm. What did you feel about this protest? Because I remember, like, we were supposed to meet last week, but you said you were going for the protests, so you'd gone for all of them, or this was your first one last week?
Gone for two of them. Was part of the two of them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the ones for last week, Tuesday and Thursday.
Tuesday and Thursday. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay. How was it last week on Thursday? Because the Thursday one, personally, I decided to stay away. I felt like the message had already changed.
Well, the side that I was peaceful. I was on the side of the side of the Koinange Street, Moi Avenue, Koinange Street, Mwindi Mbingu, Moi Avenue, and Kimathi. So I went to, you know, and I observed most of those, you know, protesters were peaceful.
Yeah.
And they were singing, and there was a lot of energy, and it was quite peaceful. There were quite peaceful demos. There was no issues with anything. So mm. I was there, and I did. I think I left a bit early.
Okay.
Yeah, but before what happened in Parliament, I was. But again, as I said, I you know, if you're on this other side, you could hardly know what was going on the other side.
Oh, okay, okay. So you are talking about the ones on Tuesday. So on Thursday, when there was this Occupy State House, that one you didn't go to town.
I was in town.
Because on Tuesday, basically, we were in the same street, because we also did Koinange, Koloita, Mwindi Bingu, Kimathi.
Yes.
We also stayed around that area. Yeah. And when we heard that people had gone to Parliament, we left town. Because we knew now it was going to be. You left town on Tuesday? What time?
Yes, I think around way past around 3.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I went back to deal with my deadlines.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. And had you ever imagined that would ever happen? Like Kenyans breaching Parliament?
Not really, but I wasn't surprised.
Okay.
I think I wasn't surprised. Quite honestly, I was not surprised, because if you are a keen political watcher and follow what's happening of politics in Kenya and what is happening, you could feel it was a long time coming. I mean, the sentiments and the the what the young people have been articulating and saying, and of course also how the whole thing was handled. And so I think in my view that in one way or the other, you know, you could see the possibility of that people are going to probably to breach that. But however, you also have to, you know, it is important to note that at every point, I think also you had the provocation from the police also, but also you had the situation where you had, you know, other characters and goons who have infiltrated in there and, you know, were causing all manners of mayhem. And so and mostly the you know, the police kept provoking
the protesters.
And so in that sense, you know, that was bound to happen. But more importantly is also if you are to follow the events over the number of years, then, you know, especially in more recent years, then, you know, if you look back, you know, this was bound to happen.
Okay.
I mean, also you have to, you know, there have been a lot of warnings about if you are to take a much more broader perspective about this thing. I mean, that you have actually this unemployment and what is happening to the youth. This is a time bomb. This has been said again and again and again. I suppose politicians, when they were told that, look, Gen Z's is a time bomb, they thought probably Gen Z's is some sort of a deodorant. It was actually, you know, these are very frustrated kids who actually decided to actually take matters on their own hands in terms of you know, exercising their democratic right.
And the response from the government, has that surprised you, the way the government has been super violent with protesters?
Not quite. Because if you are to look, you know, back, I mean, the government always, rather the police, if you are to look at it, you know, throughout history, I mean, they know how to react to, you know, violent protests. Mm. They have no clue how to react or to deal with peaceful protesters. And I think that was also problematic, in, so to speak, if you are to, if you are to look at from that perspective. And I think that 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 is actually was is, has been part and parcel of the problem. That largely, you know, these were the protesters were peaceful.
Yeah.
Largely, apart from actually a few, you know, again, the you know, the, you know, you have politicians and other characters actually who have actually taken advantage of the situation, and they have actually got in there, and we are now in we are where we are with this.
Yeah, and also, like, one of the things that has happened is there was the chant "Ruto must go," and with that has come the thing of who do we think would make a better president? And one of the names that has been suggested is Matiang'i. Of course, you've been, like, you know, you've been doing political satire for long. Do you think there would have been any difference between Matiang'i if this was happening in his government, like people are protesting? Do you think there would have been any difference in the amount of violence, like, meted out on innocent protesters? Like, unarmed protesters, peaceful protesters.
Okay, maybe you phrase again your question. I mean, I want to
I'm people have been blaming the, like, that level of violence that the police, the police is doing this because Ruto allows them to do that, so some people are suggesting a better president like Matiang'i would not do the same. He'd not be that violent with protesters. But of course, you covered Matiang'i.
Okay.
So do you feel like there have been any difference if he, who was president?
I'm not sure about that. I'm very candid about that. I mean, the political, it is the security structure and the police structure that is there, is bound to react the way they reacted. I mean, that is actually, you know, that's actually how the police are structured, how they are trained, and so forth. I think a lot of times we have spoken about the police reforms and all that, and I think this is exactly some of the issues that have been raised time and time again. You need actually police reforms in the sense that you need to have police trained, for police to be trained in how to deal with the protesters, and among many other things, right? But I don't think that you know, the situation would have been any different if actually you had a different person at the helm, simply because, you know, everybody would have, you know, would have inherited that very similar structures.
Okay.
You know, and I think that is also part and parcel of the problem.
Okay. Because I always, personally, always feel like maybe a different person who maybe has gone through the struggle would treat protesters with a little bit more, like, if they are peaceful, don't beat them up. But maybe I'm
yeah, I suppose you're right. I think you would, to some extent, you would say that. But again, as we said, you have also pretty much a lot of other elements in there, in the sense that you had also people who have infiltrated the protests and so forth. However, I would still think that at the end of the day, it's important that, you know, to see as, you know, the security apparatus that we have, and, you know, are designed
to react
react that very way, you know, to protesters and to actually to demonstrators and so forth. And I think you have seen, I mean, a lot of times, you know, the challenge you have is exactly that. A lot of times in the recent history and much more, how they react to protesters is that the reaction is always that it is, in most cases where people are demonstrating peaceful, you find that the idea is actually is to not to allow peaceful demonstrators. You know, that has been always the case, and you know, you go there with that aim, you know, and that we have seen many times. I think you know, in this recent few weeks, is the idea of actually protesters being provoked and protesters being actually you know, pushed and so forth and so forth.
Okay.
But I still believe that, you know, this could have been kept much more, could have been done much more better, even with the with the with the with the security apparatus that is there. Of course, this could have this could have been avoided. There's no doubt about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then of course, when we talk about your work, one of the things that stands out is the fact that once you've decided, I don't know what it's called, you've decided on portraying someone as a certain character, you stick with it and use it like in different scenarios. So like with the president, for example, you normally use the Indian head wrap, eh? It's the turban, right?
The turban.
Yes. So how did this Indian thing come up for maybe younger people who don't understand the history? And why did you settle on that?
It was during the... when you had the Western Hotel scandal.
Okay.
I think the when President Ruto was still a deputy president, and the idea was, you know, he was... at that time, I think Western Hotel was accused of grabbing that primary school land, and you know, initially it was revealed that that you know, the hotel is owned by, you know, Sikh investors.
Yeah.
And then later on, you know, he came by to say, okay, you know, I'm the actually the real owner of the hotel, and I said, oh, you know, so you are the Sikh. investor. And they I actually, as I said, I mean, actually, you know, I had kind of plagiarized that idea. I saw somebody actually, you know, kind of had a photoshopped
picture
picture of Ruto with a turban, and so I said, oh, okay, this is a, you know, this is a good one. I think I can work with this. And so it is from there when I actually started, you know, drawing him with a turban.
But I also think there's a time he also visited, I think, the Indian community, and he wore a turban, if I'm not wrong. He also done it.
Yeah, he did that. Yeah, I mean, he's, you know, he was pictured so exactly. So it was interesting because that actually... appeared later.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it appeared later, actually.
Oh, after he don't
yeah,
been mocked.
Yeah, that was that appeared later.
And so how do you think, have you ever met him? Have you ever been in
No.
Okay.
No, I'm normally, you know, the I have always throughout my career, I've always kind of kept politicians at arm's length. I mean, I don't interact with them, and of course, my job and my role doesn't allow that. I mean, I'm some sort of an armchair expert. I mean, you know, go to cover them. I don't go to interview them. I, you know, do my, you know, I read about them. I go to online and search stuff about them and research and stuff like that, but I do not interact with them.
Okay.
But I've also made that a very for me as a person, it's also a very how do you say,
it's like one of the principles you
I'm very deliberate in the sense that, okay, you know, if you work, you know, in for a newspaper or for a media organization, you have some sort of access to these people.
Yes,
I mean, you
yes.
can meet them in functions, in so forth and so forth. But I've made it a point that I don't necessarily have to go and meet them. And of course, My job also does not necessarily need, you okay. don't need to meet them. So I tend to avoid an interaction with politicians.
Because that has reminded me, there's something that I think I saw Boniface Mwangi saying. He said that on an interview with CTA. He said that you're the one who taught him that. You taught him never get any sort of favor from a politician. Like,
oh,
always
say
keep,
that?
Yeah, he said that you... I don't know if you told him intentionally or something, or he borrowed from you, but he said that he learned that from you, that never let a politician have access to you because they'll try and influence you in one way or another.
Yeah. Boniface is a friend. And so, that has been a bit of a... something that you have to keep in mind. I mean, politicians are very crafty people. I mean, and you have to be, Kenyan politicians are very crafty characters. I mean, these are very...
They are cartoonists.
Yeah, no, they are very, they are very tricky customers. So you have to be careful with them. I mean, if you want to do your work with a modicum of freedom and with a little bit of actually, freedom in terms of what you do, it's you'd rather avoid them, and if that actually has been applied also in other in other countries, and I know some of my colleagues in different countries, that's how you work if you actually to do it, to do that and get a bit of respectability, because they can actually imagine if they they can always influence stuff. I mean, they can these are people who are not shy to use all manners of ways to bribe you to, and sometimes you are just human. I mean, you can get the moment you get close to them, they how are you going to criticize them if you get actually closer to these people? And you are supposed to be you are in the business of telling truth to power, and so that might be compromised if actually you get closer to these people. And so I tend to think that it's you are better off if you try to avoid that.
Okay. But have you ever been in a situation whereby you meet one by accident? Because all that happens, where you're in a room, and they're just like, "Hey, I saw what you did," and you dream. Either they were happy or angry.
Yeah, there have been a few incidents that you bump. I mean, sometimes you bump into them into meetings. I've bumped into meetings abroad, some of them, conferences abroad, and then some of them are not, don't shy away from a, kind of, telling you off right away and, you are mean to me and, sometimes you bump into them into some functions, once in a while. And, some have been, these are people also with big egos. So some of them, kind of want to patronize you and say, why don't you do this? You are unfair to me. I'm always, in a way, very, I don't take it personal. With these characters. After all, I'm in the business of drawing horrible cartoons. So I think I understand that, and I understand when they complain and tell me off. I mean, a few of them have written, in the past, have directly written letters to
Nation.
To Nation, to complain. Of course, these days with social media, some of them have, reacted and so forth. But I'm fine. I don't take, their comments very... I'm not offended by that.
Okay.
As I said, I'm in the business of offending people, so I understand that. As I said, I tend to avoid, interactions with these characters. I must say also, there are very few public figures who have complimented what I do, okay. You know, and, mm. and those are in the very minority, and you know, and so.
Can you name any?
I think, yes, I can name one. I mean, former Chief Justice Willy Mutunga
is,
you know, he's one person whom I has, you know, as a public figure, he has always kind of acknowledged the role of, you know, cartoonists, and yeah. I got to know a bit about him and interacted with him. Mm. He's a champion of free speech, and he has always been very supportive of editorial cartoonists and other satirists. In fact, he, even though he has been, you know, a victim of my pen, quite a number of times, and so. Mm. Yeah.
No. Okay. And now let's see. The first time you draw Ruto with the turban, are you nervous? Like, what happens? Like, the first time you draw someone like a certain character, is there a certain level of nervousness, or it's just like whatever happens, happens?
I think you don't. I come from a background, you know, working at Nation. I was actually quite, how do you say, very, you know, lucky in a way. I started, you know, when during the heady days, you know, when, you know, then I started in 1992 when things were, you know, opening up and during Moi's time, and so there has been all this build up, and I think, you know, writers, journalists, and cartoonists and satirists have, you know, over the years gained quite a lot of space, and it, you know, it's very difficult to reverse that, you know, if you're to look back. And so I've you know, what you know, your job as an editorial cartoonist, you come up with an idea, and you know, you sometimes share that with your, you know, editors, and you know, you bounce back the, you know, back and forth ideas at times, and there are times, so it's not only politicians, I mean, it's all about issues. I mean, there are times, for example, when you are dealing with hectic subjects, I mean, you know, or sensitive subjects, subjects that are taboo. Mm-hmm. There is always that a little bit of, you know, well, you know, how are people going to react about this and so forth. But I think once you are confident that, you know, this is okay, then that's fine. And of course, that's also the role of what editorial cartoonists do. I mean, you have a license to offend.
Yeah,
it's okay. A license to offend, and it's a craft that allows you to remind the people in power and you know, the society at large about these issues. And so, it is very okay from time to time when you offend people. I mean, that's the role, you know, your role. I mean, and so that doesn't bother satirists. Okay. I think sometimes I've done things, and then you, of course, you look back and say, "Oh, that was tough," you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it comes with the territory, over the years, you know, I've been sued, I've been, you know, threatened, and been, you know, not only. My family has been threatened. You get insulted, you get attacked, and luckily I've never been attacked physically, but you number of times you meet people who are very angry with you, so you have to live with that. It's part and parcel of what you do. I'm very I'm fine with that. I can live with that.
Okay. Yeah. So the lawsuit, I think one of the lawsuits that, I think it's Ian who told me about this, like when I was researching, this lawsuit didn't come up, but Uhuru Kenyatta had sued you?
So I know, you know, I over a cartoon I did, he sued the Nation, and I was enjoined.
Oh, okay.
Nation published the drawing.
Mm.
And so I know that...
Which cartoon was that?
I think it was when we had the computer error cartoons.
Oh, yeah. Typing error.
Typing errors. Yes, you remember. Yeah, so I did a drawing about that to the effect that, you know, the one lady telling the other that, well, you know, don't worry if your son is not doing well at school in mathematics, he might become a finance minister one day.
Yeah, so, yeah.
So it's, you know, it's, I'm not sure how that case ended, but I was very much aware, and it went on for some years.
Mm.
I know, I think Oliege, you know,
Mm.
I think he threatened to sue, or he sued over a cartoon I did.
Mm.
I know
the Oliech one was what?
I did him, I think, when he had a fight at a nightclub.
Oh, okay.
And I think at Florida nightclub, and I think I did a drawing of, you know, sort of like a ball coming out, you know, kicked out of
a club,
broken a window of Florida. Nightclub, and so I did that. That was one, and there I have a whole file of people of threats, and I know at one point even Martha Karua threatened to sue when he was in the government.
And when she was justice.
Yeah, when she was justice.
Mm.
And I think when she was minister for water, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
There has been also, I think, have been threats from the Chinese embassy and from the Zimbabwean High Commission, from Ugandan High Commission. I mean, my editors used really to at Nation, I think,
handle all that.
To deal with quite a lot. I mean, I must also say that. You know, I was also, in the sense, yes, I worked with a very powerful organization, in the sense that, you know, all these, you know, I was enjoined in this, but the first respondent was always, you know, the newspaper. And so the all these complaints most of the time were, you know, to my editors, and I was always insulated, and I think that also what made it, you know, and that's across, you know, across the world. The editorial cartoonists, they work for a newspaper, and so fast you have to deal with the newspaper before you reach them, so that is also something that you have to, you know, you have to deal on a regular basis.
So Uhuru, you started drawing him with the crown much later, because as the finance minister, he was not still Mudhamaki. So you started drawing him with the crown much later. Yes?
Yeah, like an emperor, prince, an emperor.
So him, because you've drawn all these presidents, you've drawn Kibaki, Moi, Uhuru. Who do you think was the most thin-skinned? Like the one guy who maybe you heard people whispering that this one, he's somewhere at State House losing it. He can't believe he's the president and people are drawing him.
Yeah, so it's probably Moi and Kibaki, you know, I'm not sure, but Moi and Kibaki probably were much more thin-skinned. I mean, I in the sense that, look, I lots of the reactions some we got, or I got, you know, also from people, not from them. But I do, you know, and as I said, I mean, I always tried throughout my career to avoid even interacting even with their,
their people.
Their people. So sometimes you meet these people, you know, and they would tell you, you know, a thing or two. But I would say Moi and Kibaki, probably, even when you meet their people, they were much more cordial, a bit cordial, and you know, they, you know, as compared to Uhuru and Ruto people, you know, who are very, you know, aggressive and and sort of like threatened you and things like that.
It's basically Uhuru and Ruto are more thin-skinned. You expect, because I expect that they're older.
Yeah, they were much more thin-skinned in terms of and you see that with their with their people. I mean, with their press teams, with their hangers-on, with all these people. When you and I think that is evident in most of their in most of their reactions to the to not only to editorial cartoonists. I mean, it's also to the media. You know, you have to understand, for example, Uhuru and Ruto, you know, they came out to attack the media during the you know, the first time they took power. They were very much you know, they attacked the media into and you know, Uhuru famously said that, you know, the newspapers are, you know,
for wrapping meat.
Yes, are for, you know, better off wrapping meat, and so it tells you the how they feel about the media.
Did you ever draw Lucy? Because I don't know if that's not, because I know Lucy had a very
I did, and they didn't go very well. So
because I just guessed, because she was really
I did a drawing of a drawing that did not and it's a funny story, because it was basically the drawing was not sanctioned by my editors. I sneaked it in, and then my, you know, the graphic team put it in there. I think later on my, you know, my editor withdrew it, but the online edition kind of went with it, and I think that was didn't go well with the with State House, and I think it caused quite a lot of issues, because I had, you know, the late first lady sitting on Kibaki, you know, basically saying, you know, Kibaki amekaliwa. So while signing a paper, so if you search online, you'll find it. And so that didn't go well, and the fact that, you know, it didn't appear in the newspaper but it appeared online, you know, fueled even a bigger uproar up there, out there. So yeah, in a way it was and that was you know, one of the drawings that I remember, you know, that was not well received at State House.
Were there any opportunities to draw Margaret?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
There are a couple. But she was always sort of like off No, she was always, you know, she was much more
laid back,
and she didn't appear, you know, she was not in the news as often as the late Lucy. And so but even that also, there was always a reaction. I think there was always this reaction that, you know, they, you know, why are you drawing the first lady, and so forth. And I think, you know, for me, it's always, you know, politicians and their wives are, you know, fair fight.
You know,
if you're a public figure, you know, that's the price you have to pay. But I never got to do a lot of her, because she was not also into the radar all the time. So,
because I saw, like, there's this one that you did around the time when there were floods, where you had the first lady and the president all the on top of the State House, and she was saying, "We are not praying hard enough."
Because
I also feel like her, she gives more opportunities of being drawn than Margaret, or because she's there, she's in our face.
She's in the news. She's always, you know, praying, you know, at State House and so forth, and you know, now also, you know, you have the office of the first lady, you know, so that is, you know, that is, you know. There's no way any satirist can avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it makes it hard to avoid, you know, such characters. So,
Well, during Margaret's time, it had not been defined as the office of the First Lady.
I think Lucy.
They were just first ladies, but
yeah, I'm not sure when that started, and especially the budgetary allocations. I would need to go back and look. But you still have them. I mean, in public, you know, in public arenas, and so that makes it a fair fight as far as editorial cartoonists are concerned. I mean, she. They go to open, they give statements, they give, you know, they even came, I think I remember I did, you know, a cartoon on this.
Pastors?
No, they had a conference on first ladies, governors, first lady, I remember. Yeah, what was that?
A lot of African countries. It's like, yes,
they have the first ladies, governors conference. I remember doing it. You know, so. So I think, you know, you can't avoid, you know, that, you know, people say, oh, you know, they are, you shouldn't, you know, satirize, you know, their families. No, I say no. Their families are part and parcel of the administration. More so because they are involved with the politics of the day. So
yeah.
I think, you know, it's difficult for any centrist to avoid that.
Yeah. And do you feel like she's played a role in making people turn against the church? Like the fact that right now people don't want the church
The church it's a self-inflicted issue.
Okay.
There's nobody to be blamed here. The church has, if you are to ask me, and I've done lots of drawing
on the church.
I've also been, you know, attacked, or rather, you know, the church has not been very happy with me. This is self-inflicted problem. You know, the church, you know, is to blame for its own role in this. You know, the church has basically failed as a whole, and they should not blame anybody. I think politicians and other people have taken advantage of it, as they usually do, and it's as simple as that.
Okay. Because I've seen nowadays people saying we don't want your prayers, just we want action. You see, we want. Like, what did you feel about Benny Hinn coming to pray?
No, I'm not a fan of you know, all these church leaders. I mean, I'm really not. I mean, I think, as I said, I think if you are to look at the history of the church, you know, in Kenya, is that the church has played very important role in the past in actually you know, fighting for, you know, all these democratic rights that we enjoy. And I think that has been eroded over the years, you know, especially in recent years. And I think that is a shame.
Yeah.
And as I said, politicians are very clever in terms of taking advantage of the situation. I mean, you have seen how, you know, money has been used to corrupt the church. You know, the church leaders unashamedly come out to brag about the money that is contributed, and I think they absconded their role as faith leaders, as, you know, they've lost their moral compass. And I think, you know, what is happening, you've seen how the protesters are the noise that they're making about the church. It's, you know, it is a reflective of that. It's a reflection of that.
Okay. And when we talked about the threats, was there at any point where, because I remember there's a time when Alan Namu and Jichopevu, they were threatened, that I think they even had to leave the country. Have you ever felt that unsafe? That you're like, ay, kutoka kwa nyumba might be.
Yeah, so my friend John, Alan Namu, I mean, they, you know, probably he's his situation is a little bit different. He's in, on, you know,
on the ground.
He on the ground, he's, you know, meeting these people, he's interviewing these people, and I think so it makes him an easier target. People don't know how I look like, you know, where I live, and I'm, you know, and I think that makes it easier for me,
yeah,
as opposed to, you know, my colleagues like John and I have, you know, lots of respect for people like John, because despite that they've kept at it, and that's not easy, because it's very difficult. And you have to live with that. So yes, there are times I've, you know, I've felt, you know, it's unsafe. A bit, I have to be careful, but I've never, there has never been a time where I have probably, you know, been very afraid to go to places. It's not that I go all over the place, but you know, I think I've lived, you know, quite normally.
Okay.
And I've gone about my business normally. You get letters, you get, you know, phone calls, you get, you know, people, text messages and so forth. And sometimes, yeah, so the few times that has happened, including, by the way, threats from politicians.
Okay.
I have, you know, reported that to my, you
editors.
Know, my editors, and I think that was enough.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So the politicians is like, ndakumaliza ama what sort of it is it? I'll get you fired.
Well, I won't want to name them, but
no, you name them. I'm saying like sort of threat. Is it? I'll finish you or I'll get you fired.
No, they you know, they would. I think they would basically say, you know, and this has not been many. I've been, you know, one or two where they would say, you know, you got to stop your nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this nonsense of yours, you have got to stop. So, you know, it's which is funny in itself. You know, it's kind of, okay, so
yeah,
I thought you were doing nonsense.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, so you, over the years, have, you know, kind of brushed that aside. And, and, I think that also has happened to my colleagues, my friend and my colleague, you know, Paul Kalemba. Mad will tell you,
yeah,
you know, similar stories. And
okay.
Yeah,
so. Oh, okay. And if you were to maybe rewind a little bit and go back to you in Tanzania, yes? Because like for a lot of Kenyans, you know, we've come to own you, like God on him Kenya, like yeah, come to God,
one of us.
Yeah, like when ni moja wetu. So how does this transition happen? Because I know you went to at the university to study architecture, but then you end up in Kenya nation. So how does that happen? Are you a student there? Someone scouts you?
No, so it's an interesting story. I did. I actually absconded my duties as a as a student. So I won a competition that the nation did in 92, and so I came. I collected to collect my prize money, and I did a bit of stint with nation, and then. After that, I had a discussion with my editors, and then I took up a job, and so I left my studies.
So the competition was an East African competition?
It was, well, we, you know, but at that time we used to get the nation, you know, you could buy the nation. So I saw the competition while at the
in Tanzania
in Dar, where I was born. You know, bred and raised. I just sent my drawing, and so I became second, and I came by to collect the money. I hanged around Nairobi for a month,
So know, where are you staying at this point?
I was staying at the hotel. As a young man, I just, you know, I was staying at, I remember very well, I was staying at, you know, staying at Mercury Hotel.
Yeah.
It used to be a Mercury Hotel, so I stayed there.
That was not expensive? You know,
sorry?
That was not expensive? Like for a whole month?
It wasn't... it wasn't that expensive because I managed to pay a little bit of that with the money that I was getting from my editorial work. So later on I had to come because there were all issues of, you know, I had to get the paperwork done and things like that. And so I did, that's what happened. And I think it's because at that time the nation lost its best cartoonist, Mad, who was there then, and he left
to join
the Standard. They spent some time looking for a replacement. And so that's how I managed to come to
Kenya,
to Nairobi, and I stayed ever since.
So when you, because I'm assuming in 92 when you're traveling to Nairobi from Dar, you used a bus?
I used the bus, yeah.
By that time, you just thought, I'm just coming, take my prize, go back home.
Yeah, I just thought, why not? I mean, I just, take a break. It was during a break, actually. So I took a break. I just came. I thought I was quite bold. I mean, myself and my parents were very unhappy with that because, you're going to a different country. I mean, you haven't been there. I was pretty young then, so but I said, well, what the heck, and why not? So ever since, and again, as I said, because as an editorial artist, you don't appear, you it's not like your face is there, your drawings are there. And so over time I had to kind of course to catch up with Kenyan politics and really understand and learn and so forth. And so with time people have always, known that I'm Kenyan
this thing that you drew that made you become second prize, what was it? Because you didn't know anything about Kenyan politics by then.
No, but I was very much I knew.
Yeah.
It's not like I was. I knew a lot about Kenyan politics, but I also did not know a lot about Kenya.
Oh, you used to read The Nation.
In the sense that if you're an editorial cartoonist, also you really need to know you have to have a deep understanding of the politics, and that I didn't necessarily have at that time. I knew a bit of this and that, but I also knew a lot about global politics and so I did stuff about also, for example, Iraq War and the US and so forth. We were supposed to do about 3 or 4 drawings, and I'm not sure I I sent mine. And I remember even my editor said they didn't understand one drawing, and that's why I became second. But notwithstanding, I ended up actually doing getting the job. So
And who was number 1, do you know?
I don't remember that. In fact, it was an Indian chap. I can't remember.
And how was the culture shock? Because in Tanzania you're used to Luha, is it Luha or Luga in Swahili? And then you come to Kenya, it's
I could get by. I mean, I was, one of the things is that, even as growing up, I mean, I was very much somebody who's pretty much, how do you say? I mean, I was...
used to love English? Globalist.
Globalist in a way. I mean, I would listen to BBC. So I was, pretty much... of course, I didn't know anything about Kenya in terms of the people, but there was the culture shock. But I was quite, I think I'm always a very adaptive person, so I kind of adapted quickly.
Mm.
And I also managed to make a few friends who were very good.
Mm.
Here, I mean, I met my, you know, early friends when I started, you know, out. And so I, and also I had to learn pretty quickly.
Yeah.
I could, you know, as a, you know, high school student, just because I rather, you know, just as a college student,
yeah,
I wasn't that intimidated because of the people I found at the Nation, I must say. So the Nation were very friendly and journalists, and but I also had to, you know, hit the ground running. I had to learn a lot of things, I mean, and pretty quickly. And I had to learn quite a lot. I mean, that was the case. I mean, I had, because I mean, I came from being completely an amateur to working professionally with a very, you know,
well-oiled machine.
I had to, you know, so it was actually quite. So it wasn't much of a culture shock. It was pretty much of actually. It was pretty much I had to
adapt. Or
yes, it was pretty much, you know, I had to, you know, adapting and learning. And I actually had to, quite honestly, I had to, I was determined basically to, you know, to learn. And yeah, and I was kind of, yes, I mean, I, you know, my working with a very, you know, this very, very good journalist. And very, very passionate journalist. So.
Who was the editor-in-chief at that point?
At that point, it was Wangethi Mwangi, who was very, very, Wangethi was very good of me, to me. And he was also, you know, I think Wangethi must have seen something in me because he was very also protective of me and he gave me a lot of guidance it's also my, you know, coming, you know, with my background, my, you know, kind of my English was not very good and I had to, you know, to learn and so forth but I was very determined and also learned a lot of other
So were you able to you must have worked with him, Whispers, eh? Whispers was still
Mutahi
was still there.
Yeah. Worked with him. I think he was at Standard, and also through Mad. I met him through Mad. He was at the
Whispers was at Standard.
Was at the Standard, but he came back at some point
to Nation.
Yes, so I worked with him, but I got to know him. I got to hang out a lot with him. We spent a lot of time with Paul and him. And other journalists in lots of weekends I would meet him and other journalists and writers
I feel like that because at that point I'm a kid and I feel like the journalists in that time were sort of celebrities because like when I think of Whispers and I think of Kwendo Opanga, I feel like these names were a certain level.
Yeah. These were big guys. I mean, no doubt about it. I mean, they were the celebrities of their time.
Mm.
And they also, you know, these were also very good journalists. I mean, one of the things. So I learned a lot also from these people, no doubt about that. I mean, I learned a lot. I read a lot.
Yeah.
I, no doubt about it. And I had to go back and forth reading previous, you know.
Yeah, things that have happened.
You know, look through the stuff that has happened in the past, read, you know, books that, journals and so forth.
Mm.
We didn't have mobile phones then, so you had to go, you know, either, you know, the library and research. If you had to look for a particular somebody's picture, you have to go in the library and go through the, you know, the files, and so it was actually quite you know, time consuming and so forth, and then also, you know, at the same time you have deadlines waiting for you, and after you had to do a lot of work. I mean, I had to do lots to do editorial drawings for the Taifa, for Nation. I had to do Whispers on Sunday. I had to do so my education was quite actually you know, hectic.
So you're the one who used to draw him with that big nose, because there was this iconic big nose, so it's,
you know, the
big forehead.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think I picked on. I picked from. Mad. I didn't create the character. Yeah, because, you know, he was already the character was already created.
Okay. You know, okay. He, so you just picked on it.
Yeah. He, you know, and so I had to. I had to pick up from what.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
From where Mad left off. So I, you know, it was already a character, and I continued. I had to do drawings on Sergeant's Diary. I had to do. It was actually a whole lot of.
Okay. Because I don't know why, in my mind, I just assumed that you just do the ones I see Gado written.
No.
So you have to do everything
of,
else.
Yeah, okay. I had to do a lot of things. I think with time is, you know, the Nation hired
other
a
people.
Lot more artists during my time. And so I ended up actually just doing the editorial work.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Which is actually a lot of work in
itself. Yeah, I know. I know. Because you have to.
Yeah, you have to
know everything that's happening. Then think of the most interesting thing. So, do you like submit a few and then they choose one, or what happens? So you just draw one and you tell them this is what we are going with tomorrow.
No. So over time that has changed. I mean, at Nation I would and you know, back then I would, you know, come up with an idea and probably sometimes one or two, and probably share that with an editor, with my editors, and I would finalize it, and then they would, you know,
decide. Yeah. Okay.
With time, of course, then, you know, you would, come up, you know, sometimes it's difficult to come with two ideas or three ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
But you would pick an issue and you would say, think, okay, this is it.
Okay.
And so you would, you know, work on that, because it's also not easy to just, you know, draw three,
that's
four
what I'm thinking.
Ideas. However, you sometimes, you know, work with four, three ideas, and then you say, okay, this is what I'll go.
Okay.
Or
okay.
Probably this, I can keep this one for tomorrow. I can probably wait for this. Probably this is not ready, or probably this is not working out as, you know, as well as you want. So you end up with one, and then you, you know, so it, you know, with that, then your editors would okay that. And with time, then you would know probably if an idea is problematic or not, and then you'll just you know, but there have been times where, you know, editors would reject, you know, your ideas because it's probably
can bring problems,
sensitive, or sometimes it's probably, you know, it could be there are legal implications.
Okay.
Implications to it, and so forth. So they would say, you know, if they see that, they would do that. And at times, editors would be also say, oh, okay, this might bring us problem. And, and you know, and most of the time, I think a lot of times where editors would say, well, this will bring a problem, but we'll go with it anyway. And you know, so, and again, I must admit also, I worked with fantastic editors at Nation, and you know, and they very much protected me and made sure that, okay, you know, when the shit hits the fan, you kind of, you know, you are protected, you're okay.
Because that makes me curious, like the first time drawing Moi, because remember Moi was larger than life, by the time you're coming, it's when we've just gotten multi-party democracy, people are still very afraid of him. Because we used to hear that he knew everything. So when was the first time you drew him? 92 itself, or you had to wait for
92? But I think he has been also drawn by already other cartoonists.
Oh, even even as a dictatorship.
Yes, I think in a way there was a way he was presented, and I think he was, you know, kind of the joke about Moi is sort of like was drawn. We started drawing slowly by slowly by slowly, turning him around.
Mm.
And I think one day he sort of like he was there.
Mm.
So I think when we started was the idea of drawing Moi alone was, you know, something. It's like, you know, it doesn't matter what you are drawing.
Mm.
But with time, it wasn't a big deal, and you had it wasn't necessarily, you know, by mid-90s, you know, of course you could draw him. Mm. But, you know, so it was, yes, it was actually you know, something like, okay, this is somebody who you don't want to mess up with.
Mm.
But again, the fact that, you know, I was working at Nation, for Nation, so that was, you know, made it easier.
You're not afraid that he'll be like, this person is not even Kenyan in quotes, how dare he draws me and I'm the president?
I don't think he cared any less about that. I mean, I've had, you know, of course, work permit, but I think he had bigger problems to deal with rather than dealing with
a lot of parties
with the city. I mean, he was very, you know, he was broadly speaking, he was very much also always concerned about what is written about him and
the
press in general. And he was always kind of, you had these stories of him following up what is happening, you know, through the press and so forth. But I think by that time also, it was accepted that, yeah, you can
draw.
What you draw was always contestable in the sense that, okay, so of course there were certain drawing that, okay, you know, we can't probably publish this, but with, of course, again, with time, we got to buy that in terms of what is acceptable and what is not.
Okay, so after he left 2002, do you have anything that you drew that you're like, this one I would not have drawn when he was still president? Did you ever, because I remember afterwards we were just mocking him and there was nothing wrong with that, it just became normal, like Moi is.
Yeah, I think no. I think even now I look back, I think there were, well, there are drawings that I did, I would say, oh, I look back and this was rough. This was
probably,
but not necessarily like, I don't think I have regrets, so to speak. There are drawings that I've always said, maybe I should have done better, you know, so like you always have that, so.
Mm.
I think that happens, you know, with many artists.
Mm.
That, yeah, you know, I could have done even a better job.
Yeah,
I think that I do.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. And right now, I'd say you've lived in Kenya more than you've lived in Tanzania. So deep down, you yourself, do you feel more Tanzanian or more Kenyan? Because I feel like you are. We have every right to claim you because. You've been here longer. And you've lived here longer.
No, I won't blame you for sure. But no, I call myself a true East African.
Yeah. Okay.
And so no, I'm very much also Tanzanian. I mean, I go there for my, you know, holidays. I, you know, my brothers and sisters are there.
Okay.
My father is there. My mother passed on a few years ago, but professionally, I've worked, you know, throughout here. My two kids were born here, and so it's. So yeah, I mean, I did. I feel very, you know. Very much Kenyan,
okay.
But I feel also very much Tanzanian. I mean, I know, for example, Kenyan politics well. You know, I've gone to do lots of other things. I've produced television shows.
I've
formed a production house here. So I've done a lot of things here professionally. And yes, so I'm very fine, you know, in Nairobi. But I'm also one of those people, if you throw me to Antarctica, I will survive.
You'll adapt. Okay.
I will, yeah, and I've had the opportunity to travel around the world of, you know, studied in Canada, studied in Italy.
Yeah.
I have, and I'm, as I said, I'm very much, also very much what you would say, a globalist in many, many respects.
Okay.
But yeah, I think, you know.
Yeah, because the next thing that I wanted to ask was like, we see you in the protests like last week. So the question is, after all this time, did you end up becoming also a Kenyan citizen, or is there a dual Kenyan Tanzanian, or what happens?
No, we don't have. So